Hey, this is Megan Rapinoe.
And I'm Sue Bird.
We've decided to turn our crazy IG live show into a podcast for your listening pleasure. Enjoy the show.
A Touch More.
New episodes of A Touch More drop Tuesday only on the Blue Wire Podcast Network. Be sure to subscribe to the show on Spotify, Apple, or anywhere else you listen to podcasts.
And welcome to another episode of Bulls HQ, a Chicago Bulls podcast on the Blue Wire Sports Podcasting Network. We are brought to you today by Bet Online and Blue Chew. Thank you to them for sponsoring the show, and thank you to you for joining us on this episode of the show, one in which we'll be reviewing episodes 7 and 8 of The Last Dance, because that is pretty much all there is to talk about at the moment, and pretty much that's the only thing I want to talk about at the moment anyway. And here to do that with me today is the one, the only, C-Red Fred. Fred, how are you, sir?
Mark, my friend, I'm doing living the dream as well you can in a quarantine, but this doc just keeps on delivering. Just when I didn't think it'd get any higher, every week just comes with more emotional delivery. I just can't believe it. I thought the last 7 and 8 were the best twos. No surprise that episode number 7 was the best episode so far.
Yeah, the episodes keep getting better the more they delve into these sort of deeper and more significant topics. We probably didn't get that as much in episodes 1 and 2, which was just, you know, setting the table as to who Jordan was, who Pippen was, and then obviously going into Dennis and his background and those sorts of things. But the more we get into the nitty-gritty of things and the commotion surrounding the team as we sort of start to get into that era now in episodes 7 and 8, which covered off basically where we left off last time. So essentially from 93 onwards into about 96, the end of that first repeat. Yeah, the end of the first title of the second repeat, I should say. So that's essentially where this sort of where these episodes take place. I guess a 2.5 year span between 93 and 96, or somewhere in that vicinity at least. It covers obviously Jordan's initial retirement, the unfortunate murder of his father, which, you know, the impact that had on him more as a personal level, but the impact that had on him from his decision to retire, what that meant for the Bulls during Michael's absence, obviously Jordan playing baseball, what that meant to him, and then his eventual return to the team in 96 or in 95 rather, the trials and tribulations of that season before moving into the legendary 72-10 season. So yeah. At a very, very high level, that's what episodes 7 and 8 covered. But what were the things that stood out to you that was most fascinating to you?
Well, I mean, there were a lot of great moments, I thought, in this episode where the number one being at the end where Michael started to get a little emotional talking about how he played the game. I thought that whole section was phenomenal. One of the things I noticed in that specific section was they showed a part of practice. And I kind of tweeted about this, but I think it's absolutely true. As a coach I've been blessed to coach a lot of really good teams, girls basketball, my daughter's teams, my son's teams over the course of the last, 10 or so years, a lot of these teams have been great. And one thing I can say is the players who finish first or near first in what are ladders, they used to be called suicides, and team sprints have been almost invariably the ones that are most conducive to winning. These are the players that I just love to coach. These are players that really care. And I noticed in that clip while he was talking that they showed a clip of Jordan at practice leading the whole team in wind sprints. Did you catch that? Caught? And yeah. So that was one thing that really stuck with me. And I can count on one hand the amount of them who finish last who generate more wins. You know, like there have been a few occasions where we've had kids that are extremely talented that finish last, but it's so rare. In general, that's been a fact. So seeing Jordan, you know, lead the whole team, I think that's what really true greatness is about. When you have a guy who's so incredibly talented, yet he's the hardest worker on the team, that just is going to yield something incredible. And that's what we had here with Michael.
Yeah, for sure. And you referenced that at the end of episode 7, where he started to get emotional to the point where he called for a break because he was getting emotional and talking about what winning meant to him, what it took to win, and the price of his leadership and the price of winning and all that sort of stuff. I guess he was addressing the question of the fact that his teammates didn't necessarily like him, or he didn't come across as a nice guy as such. So that's where that sort of conversation sort of took place. And it was interesting to see Michael react that way. That was probably the realest moment we've had throughout the docuseries thus far, of Jordan showing true actual vulnerability and emotion. So that was certainly interesting to see. But the line that stood out to me was the fact that he never asked his teammates to do something he would never do. And to your point, you know, when you see Jordan running sprints and running lanes and doing all those sorts of things, the fact that he's the one doing it, he's the one in front, he's the one carrying himself that way, he's dragging and pulling everyone with him in his own way. We can debate if it had to be that way or if that's necessary to win. You have to be a maniac like Jordan. But yeah. To his point, he never did anything or asked of them anything that he would never do, which is fascinating, as is your ability to always connect professional sports to your coaching career with coaching kids. I find that fascinating too.
I got to throw one other note in there. Tim Grover's part where he actually got choked up, I thought was phenomenal. Where he talked about, after they lost to the Magic, and I remember those games extremely well. The team was 34-31 when Jordan came back in 95. They went on a run. You know, they did really well to finish the year, but there were a lot of questions about MJ at that point. Like, oh my gosh, he's not what he once was. And for him to tell Tim, you know, I'll see you tomorrow, thinking he's going to take 2 weeks off, just a testament to this guy's work ethic and greatness. He's just such a I feel just so lucky to be in Chicago to witness this guy. I thank God that I was able to be a fan of this team when this athlete came to Chicago. It's just so fortunate. It's like somebody who was a fan of the Yankees in the 20s, right? And got to see Babe Ruth or Jackie Robinson in the Dodgers, one of the greats. Michael Jordan, to me, beats them all. Like, he's the greatest athlete of all time. And to think that I was formed, that's why I am what I am today. That's why I'm C. Red Fred. That's why no one else loves the Bulls like I do. It's because of this guy, Michael Jordan. I worship the guy. I do have to note the section on the 1.8 seconds. For all the Pippen lovers out there, and this is something that I lived through. I remember this is extremely well. If you know, 1.8 seconds left in that game, what was lost in the documentary was the context of what happened in that game. The Bulls were down 2-0. They came back home. They played great for the first three quarters. They had an 89-70 lead going into the fourth quarter. The Bulls over the next 11 and a half minutes blew a 19-point lead. It was one of the most monumental, disappointing, embarrassing collapses I've ever seen in a basketball game for them to blow that lead. And Ewing ties it up with 1.8 seconds left. So that's the context. If Tony Kukoc does not hit that shot, you would have to be a moron to think the Bulls win that game. They absolutely lose that game in overtime. And if he misses that shot, let's just assume he misses it, Tony saved Pippen's career in Chicago, because Pippen basically rehabbed his whole image within that series. The dunk on Ewing happened in game six. There is no game six if Tony Kukoc doesn't hit that shot. There is, and this is Tony Kukoc, this is the same player that Scottie Pippen had questioned whether or not he should even be in the league during the Olympics a few, you know, scant 2 years or a year or so earlier. And for him to, in this doc, say to this day that he would do it again, even after Bill Cartwright is crying in the post game, to me is pure insanity. And I was a little offended. I love Scottie Pippen. He's one of the best defensive players I've ever seen. He could be the best defensive player I've ever seen. That's the only area he approaches Michael. And anything else, anybody who lived through it, no one would even question whether or not Scottie was in the same class as Michael, because he wasn't. Nobody was. It's not a fault against him. But the gap in the delta between those two is so huge and so massive. I think it's kind of ridiculous how there's been this movement to kind of put those two closer together when they're really not. You know, Scottie did not have that clutch gene. So I think I've kind of waxed poetic enough. What say you?
I knew this was coming, and I knew it was coming.
Here we go.
In our previous episodes that we've discussed, The Last Dance, there has been you have sort of alluded to, I don't know what the right word is for it, but I've sensed a frustration among you amongst the Force, let's say, amongst you, with your the way you deal with Scottie Pippen, or the way you interpret his legacy and the way he should be remembered. And for whatever reason, you seem to have some issues with Scottie, or at least those who propel Scottie to certain levels in your mind, at least. So given what was happening in episodes 7 and 8, which you alluded to and jumped to just then, in terms of the fact that Scottie sat out in game 3 of this Eastern Semis when Jordan had retired. Yeah, I knew in advance what your reaction to that would be. So I'm not surprised to hear you say that. Personally, for me, being the massive Pippen fan that you're probably alluding to, I'm one of the target audience that you are alluding to. I've got to this day, I've got no issues with Pippen doing it, only because I love Scottie so much. Obviously, in a more rational moment, I can agree that it was an absolutely ridiculous thing to do. And him saying that he would still do it again to this day, maybe I'm giving Scottie too much credit, but they did say at the time that he was regretful, he was tearful, and he apologized for doing it. Now, for him to say now in the documentary that he would do it all again, maybe there was something snipped out of it. Maybe there was more context that he wanted to add to that he didn't necessarily add, in the sense that, you know, as an example, maybe he did what he did and he would continue to do so. He doesn't regret that decision because it led to certain events, like you were sort of alluding to, that played out in a way that bettered him, bettered his team, and made for the entire situation to be a lot more fruitful in that sense. So maybe that's what he was trying to say when he was saying he didn't regret his situation or regret making that decision. So maybe I'm reading into it. Maybe I'm giving Scottie too much cover on that front, but I'm prepared to go to bat for Scottie on that one.
Well, Jason Goff, in the latest Bulls talk, I don't know if you heard this.
I have, yeah.
Had the ridiculous analogy of where he was talking to Big Dave. Big Dave, who called it correctly, saying that, you know, it was absolutely ridiculous that Pippen, what he did. There's absolutely no doubt. It was an embarrassing moment, and he doesn't understand that people are trying to justify it. And then Jason said, all right, let me throw this out at you. Let's say in 6 years, the Bulls are contending for a title, and on Bulls Outsiders, Bulldog tells him, why don't you sit this one out? We're going to see Red Fred come in. It's ridiculous. I was literally just like, I couldn't believe you would throw that analogy out there. Here's the difference. Big Dave has come through time and time again. Unlike Scottie at that point, who had the migraine, who had missed shot after shot in the Suns series when he was given the opportunity to win those games in the middle games in Chicago that we lost, and Paxton had to save us in game 6 in Jordan. It's a ridiculous analogy for that reason. Now, I don't mind be calling Tony Kukoc, don't get me wrong, but Big Dave, unlike Scottie at that time, has shown he's come through again and again. So although I will take Bulldog's suggestion and just jump on the show as a fourth outsider, I don't think replacing him is a proper analogy. Do you see what I'm saying? I'm kind of talking in circles here.
I mean, it's ridiculous what you're trying to ascertain. But look, what I would say is, and Dave on that podcast was – the way he would approach it, he said that he was, you know, if Bulldog did make that decision, if Kevin made that decision, whilst he wouldn't be happy with it, because that's the coach in that situation making the decision, that he would accept it and he would do whatever the coach says, essentially. That's what he was saying. He was playing or suggesting that he would play the good sport on that, which I completely believe that would be Dave's character. But let me just say, if I was in Dave's position and I was on Bulls Outsiders and Kevin came to me and said to me that I'm replacing you with C Red Fred tonight, I'm doing that for playoff coverage. If I was on Bulls Outsiders, I would pull a Pippen if you were replacing me too. So I completely understand Scottie's position on it.
Analogy would be if Rusty LaRue was called to take the shots instead of Pippen in that case. I'm just telling you. or instead of Tony.
But it's interesting how Pippen is being portrayed in this, because a lot of it has been about his poorer moments, let's say. So you referenced then the some of his playoff failures, if we want to call it there. They've obviously touched on the contract issues that he's had throughout the years with Kraus, the Kukoc stuff. Obviously, they've touched on that already. We went into the 1.8 seconds last night on episode 7 and 8. So from Scottie's perspective, at least, the bigger talking points that they've discussed in this in this documentary series at the moment have probably been more so on the negative sides of Scotty, or at least the bigger points that will land with the audience, at least those who aren't familiar with Scotty's body of work. It's probably been more on the negative side. I don't know how you feel about that, but I've been uneasy about it. And look, I'm not surprised given that this is a project that Jordan has his hands all over. So I'm not surprised that those elements are sort of taking shine, particularly in a documentary where that those sorts of narratives are probably more entertaining and will probably rivet the audience a lot more than Scotty being, you know, the ultimate defender, the ultimate teammate, all that sort of stuff. They didn't really get into that 94 season at all, which again, no surprise given that Jordan wasn't there. But I don't know, how do you feel about them sort of overlooking certain aspects, not just with Scotty, but even other members of the team, even Phil and then the like.
I'm shocked you're hearing this. I started to hear this narrative that this has been unfair to Scotty, and I'm like shocked. I totally disagree with that. Number one, it's changed my opinion of him somewhat in that for the better, in that every teammate unequivocally loves the guy. I haven't heard one negative statement about Scottie Pippen as a teammate.
Yeah.
You heard it from Kukoc. You heard it from Kerr, Wennington. Every guy beloved Scottie Pippen. Now, I will admit, I was not aware of his universal love, even Michael Jordan, for Scottie Pippen. And it wasn't aware there was such a universal love for him as a teammate. And for that, he absolutely deserves credit. I mean, he did engender quite a bit of admiration and respect. But as a fan who lived through that era, I thought glossing over the loss, the migraine game, to me was the biggest mistake. That migraine game, to me, I'm going to bring this up with my friend Sylvie, hopefully in the next few weeks, and I hopefully going to have him on the show. I got to invite him on. But to me, up until that point, that was the worst loss in the history of Chicago sports. It was worse than 84 Cubs, 83 White Sox, 89 Cubs. I think it's even to this day underestimated how devastating that loss was. When you look back at that time, there was discussion about the Michael and the Jordanaires. Was this team good enough to win a title with Michael Jordan? They had lost 4-1 to the Pistons 2 years previously. The year previously, they lost 4-2. You bring in Phil Jackson, you lose 4-3 with Scottie's migraine. Horace Grant goes 3-17. B.J. Armstrong 1-8. Scottie Pippen 1-10. There was massive questions at that point whether or not the Bulls would ever win a title with this cast of characters surrounding Michael Jordan. There were even questions about Michael, even then, which was utterly ridiculous because, in my opinion, he was ready to win titles in 1986. It was his teammates who weren't ready. And to have that type of performance in such an important and pivotal game, there were massive questions about Pippen. He didn't make the All-Star team in 91. He signed his contract or questions about his health. He absolutely performed better than his contract. But that, the 1.8, again, I thought was a little bit soft-pedaled. It was a massive, massive issue in Chicago. And I think he was even traded. Let's be honest what happened. For those who aren't aware, Dave Kaplan, you can listen on Bullseye to this story. The Bulls traded Scottie Pippen in June of 1994. After this playoff series, that game occurred in May 13th that we're talking about, the 1.8 game. The Bulls lost in 7 to the Knicks. He was absolutely traded for Sean Kemp, and the Bulls were going to move up from 21 to 13, and the Sonics were going to get moved down from 13 to 21. So they were actually going to move up in the draft and get Sean Kemp. I remember working that evening and hearing about this and thinking Sean Kemp is one of the best seven players in the NBA. This is a great trade. I was excited. I was absolutely excited just because there was still such a stain about the 1.8 and the fact that they weren't going to go anywhere. If this was a team with Scotty as the best player, they weren't good enough to get to a title and win a championship, whereas Sean Kemp was an exciting player. That trade was not stopped in Chicago. That was stopped in Seattle when fans started canceling their season tickets because Sean Kemp was traded. So I have a completely different view of Scottie Pippen than most people because I do remember what it was like before they won the three titles and then the 1.8 happened. He was not at the status that he is today and looked at fondly. No doubt about it, he's one of the best defensive players I've ever seen, but he had a lot of holes in his game, in just my opinion, in terms of coming through when it mattered most. 1998 against the Indiana Pacers, Game 3, he had two massive free throws to wrap up that game. The Bulls would have gone up 3-0. He bricked them both. Reggie Miller comes down, hits a three, the Bulls lose. So, I mean, he had that cost him 2-1, and that game ended up going 7. It should have never got to that point. There were a lot of times he failed like that. I never trusted him like I did Michael or even Tony when the game was on the line on the offensive end. I know there's a lot of people listening to his role in their eyes, but if you live through those years like I did, I don't. That's the other thing is I don't think he was ever a top five player in the NBA. Barkley was better at that point. Akeem Olajuwon, David Robinson. Trying to think of some of the other players during that era that were really great. No, I mean,
you don't have to. Scotty was amazing in 94. I mean,
that was the only year. Shaquille O'Neal was better in the years after that. That was the only year I'd say he was a top five player. And I think he did make first team All NBA that year. Is that? I'll go back and check. I'll let you respond to my comments. I've talked on for a while here. What's your opinion?
Yeah, my opinion is you hold grudges against Scottie Pippen, and like just like you hold grudges against someone like Jimmy Butler. I get it, Fred. You're a vengeful person. Oh, you hold your grudges, and that's what I'm taking away from it. Every time we talk about Jimmy Butler, you talk about his failures against Boston in that series, but you never bring up the good things. It's always that. And it's similar with Scotty, and I've sensed it throughout our conversations over the last few weeks in talking about The Last Dance, and I knew it was just going to come back as a topic, and we've spent the last 10 minutes talking about Scotty Pippen. That's how much you hold your grudges, my friend.
All right, so here, Karl Malone, Charles Barkley, David Robinson, Clyde Drexler.
The same names.
Akeem Olajuwon. What'd you say?
So they're the same names as you mentioned before. Let's move on. Right, you're a Scotty hater. I'm a Scotty appreciator.
I'm not a Scotty hater. I think he's a fantastic player.
Debatable. I don't think that's the case. Okay.
Hey, he's better than Jimmy Butler, no doubt. Go on.
Moving along, let's talk about the rest of episodes 7 and 8. Before we do so, let's take a quick break. First, let me tell you about Bet Online. With currently no NBA, NHL, or MLB, you might think there's nothing to bet on. Well, you'd be wrong. Our exclusive partner, Bet Online, still has hundreds of events, games, and props to wager on. From their online casino to poker and blackjack, they are bringing Vegas to you. Missing the NFL? Then no problem. Bet Online has live daily Madden NFL 20 simulations you can bet on. You can also still bet on Survivor, Big Brother, American Idol, stock prices, and even Nathan's hot dog eating contest. All of that is open 24 hours a day, and all of it is online. Go to betonline.ag and use promo code BLUEWIRE to join today and receive your new welcome bonus. BetOnline, your online wagering solution. Let me also tell you about Blue Chew. Guys, looking to last longer and go a few extra rounds? Get to BlueChew.com. BlueChew.com has the first ever chewable that brings your performance in the bedroom to another level. They've got the same active ingredients that are in Viagra and Cialis, so you know they work. And since they're chewable, they work even faster. You can take them anytime, day or night, even on a full stomach. Plus, you don't even need to go to the doctor's office or spend time waiting in the pharmacy line. BlueChew's online physician is free of cost, and once approved, your order ships straight to your door in discreet packaging. Here's a great deal for you guys. Visit BlueChew.com and get your first order free when you use promo code BLUEWIRE. Just pay the $5 shipping. Again, that's BlueChew, BLUEChew.com, promo code BLUEWIRE. All right, back to the podcast now. Let's move on from talking about Scottie Pippen because we're going to get lost in that conversation again for another 10 minutes. I wanted to talk about the mystique around Jordan being this, you know, psychopathic winner of sorts. The fact that he had to be this crazy, obsessed winner the way he was. What are your opinions on this? Because in watching episodes 7 and 8, I was going back and forth as to whether it had to be this way and whether it could only be this way based on the teammates that Michael had. And I say that because, and I alluded to this last week where I mentioned Tim Duncan and the fact that Tim Duncan won just as much as, well, not just as much, but won pretty heavily in the NBA, going about it in a completely different approach to Michael Jordan, yet he was obviously wildly successful, as were the Spurs. Completely different approach to the Bulls, to Jordan, which I guess suggests that there's multiple ways you can go about this, multiple ways that you can win. But what are your thoughts around Jordan's perception in terms of him being this jerk, the one, this guy that this guy that didn't necessarily get along with his teammates. We saw the way he treated Scott Burrell. We saw, or they got into the whole punching incident with Will Perdue and Steve Kerr and what that sort of did for those guys, but the team itself. But do you think it was necessary for Michael to be this crazy maniac that he was in order to bring out six rings, or could it have happened a different way?
I don't think it could have happened a different way. I think those players weren't good enough for them to be treated like Tim Duncan treated them. Like, I think he needed to toughen up Scottie and Horace. They were not, to me, mentally or physically tough enough to beat the Pistons. And that was proven in the fact that how awful they played continually for the first 2 years in the playoffs against them. I think it finally got to the point where Michael said, listen, I need you to be more scared of me at practice than you are of the Pistons. You're not going to have any choice here. You're going to deal with them and stand up to them, or you're going to have to deal with me. That was how I always viewed that situation. But I will admit, it's a very fine line. Like, I've run into guys in my career, like, not like Michael, skill wise, or, you know, you have to bring it on the court if you're going to be like that. I always bring this story. In my younger days, I'm not going to mention the guy's name. Let's just call him Tommy. Tommy was an excellent basketball player. It's a true story. Tommy was an excellent basketball player.
Just before you go on, though, are you going to be the Jordan in this parallel?
Let's just assume I'm always the Jordan in these stories. But I was always more, let's say, the Tim Duncan type of teammate. I always believed in, you know, building guys up instead of tearing them down, you know, that kind of attitude.
But you didn't play any difference.
I was never – this is going to my high school days. In high school, I was not the best player, unlike I was in grammar school. But in high school, I was right in the middle. And we had a guy in our high school team, just call him Tommy, who was a complete jackass, who thought – he was a good player, but he wasn't great by any means. And he loved to demean other players on the team when they didn't do well. And so there was a situation we had early in the year. There was a kid on our team who got fouled, Steve M. Anybody who was there remembers this situation. Two free throws to end the game. We were down by two. He pulled a Kirk Heinrich and bricked both of them. And so in the locker room afterwards, Tommy was just berating this kid, Steve, just calling, well, you jackass, you cost us the game, you mother effer, just yelling at him. It was so uncalled for. A lot of us stepped in and said, you know, pound sand. And eventually we diffused the situation. But lo and behold, here we are in the playoffs. Let's fast forward 3 months. We're in the playoffs, first round, and guess what happens? Tommy gets fouled with no time left on the clock. I think we were down one, actually. Take this back. We were down one, and he had two free throws, and he missed both of them. And nobody on that team talked to that kid in the locker room. Nobody said a word to him. Nobody gave him a word of encouragement, because that jackass got what he deserved. So that's the difference. Like, if you're going to act like that, you better be able to talk the talk and walk the walk, right?
Yeah.
Michael could. And as he said, too, there was nothing I asked my teammates to do that I wouldn't do. That may be so. I just don't ever believe in, like, questioning the manhood of teammates. I don't ever think that's a good thing. It's the same thing Jimmy Butler did, except with far less great results, you know, basically with first round exits. So what good is that? You know, like, Michael actually won titles. That's what matters. And I think what he did was, the results speak for themselves. Weddington said it. What say you?
Well, I don't know. I go back and forth on the whole situation, because, you know, ignoring your illustrious playing career and that, you know, soliloquy that you sort of just dove into and how that related to my question somehow, I go back and forth on it, because to me, in a sense, that Michael could probably only get away with being that way based on the personalities that Phil was, who Scottie was, who Horace was, who all these players around him were, and their willingness to accept that style of leadership. If they were different type of personalities, different type of people who maybe wouldn't want to hear it that way, then maybe Michael's abrasiveness wouldn't be able to be received in the way he was sort of delivering it. So in a sense, it could work for Jordan, for the Bulls. Obviously, it did work based on who all the personalities were, putting that all in the melting pot and it coming out the way it did. It clearly worked. But I just wonder, with different personalities, if it could work like that. And maybe it doesn't. Maybe that is the the beautiful thing about team sports is that the mix of it all is what makes it all work. Jordan can be a complete psychopath like that to someone like Scotty, to Horace, because they're the type of personalities who need that, who would welcome that. Whereas, I don't know, if Jordan tried to do that against Charles Barkley, if Charles Barkley was his teammate, would Charles be as receptive? I don't know. Or insert whoever player's name who you want in that case. Same thing with the whole Tim Duncan thing. And that's why when I think about it, I go back and forth as to, did it need to be this way? Well, I don't know if it did, but clearly it worked. So who cares? The results are what they are. But it's just an interesting thought experiment, I suppose.
I don't think that form of leadership works anymore, though.
Probably not.
Like, I think there were guys back when Michael played, when I was growing up, it was a lot more accepted. It was a lot more of the Bobby Knight mentality where coaches would just berate players and just tell them how much they sucked. And it was just like a lot more accepted. It doesn't go that way anymore. It's more of a sales job. I think Boylan is partly, you know, kind of like from that era, and Thibodeau, and those guys, those days are long gone. You know, I think you really need to be more of a salesman in that coaching position to have any modicum of success.
Yeah, I would agree with that based on today, for sure. Another thing that was pretty key in episodes 7 and 8 was the building up the legend of Jordan. Not that they necessarily needed to do that, but the fact that he would take any slight of any level, no matter how small or big, and would use that as fuel to get him going, which I guess is what he needed, or was part of the reason why he retired in 93, the fact that he had no more motivation anymore. The media had probably driven him out of the game. We obviously touched on the passing of his father. That most certainly had an impact on his decision to retire as well. But the fact that he had nothing really left to achieve in the game at the end of 93 is probably why, when he came back, he needed these small little things to get him going, to motivate him the way he did, because he still was the best. He still was the greatest when he came back. So they touched on the things with George Karl, with that classic memeable moment where Gary Payton is talking about how he was sort of locking up Jordan. Then they quickly cut to Jordan of Jordan watching Payton talk about that on the iPad, and then Michael just obviously laughing at that. And the fact that the glove did nothing to necessarily negate his performance. George Karl, there's the LeBradford Smith stuff. There was just these elements of these stories sprinkled in about it where someone would do something, if it was real or even not, like the LeBradford Smith stuff. Obviously, they went into BJ Armstrong and what he did in game 2 in 98 as well. So those sorts of things were touched on in this episode as well, and just sort of helped build the mystique or the mythology of Jordan, I suppose.
Yeah, struck me is there's so many things that happened in his life that I wonder if it didn't happen, if things would have ended up completely differently. Let's just touch on, you know, his father getting shot in a random act of violence, and, you know, just the way the press was so irresponsible and so nauseating, and with this incredibly dumb, you know, conspiracy theorist running around, you know, when the odds clearly are that, or all the evidence showed that it had nothing to do with that. The evidence was this guy was murdered in a burglary attempt. And, you know, it was so... But what happens if he didn't, if his father never parked the car there? What happens if his father lived? You know, I wonder if he would have quit basketball. I wonder if he would have played baseball. I know he said he was thinking about it then, but I think that's a much easier discussion or easier thing to say with his father gone, you know, and you lose your passion for playing basketball. I do wonder what would have happened. What would have happened if Tony's shot was missed and Pippen would have been traded? Would he have come back? Would he come back if it was Sean Kemp on the team? I think he would have if it was in Tony at the three, but, you know, we don't know. We'll never know. What would happen if Paxson missed the three against the Suns? Then would have gone to game 7. Would he have won that game? Would it have been a different story? If the Bulls would have lost to the Suns, would he more like come back to win another title? You know, so there's all these what ifs there, but, you know, looking back, I don't think the story could have been written much better. Although I will say, the other one was the baseball strike. I don't know if he would have come back if there wasn't a baseball strike in 1994. It seemed like he was pretty dedicated to the game of baseball if there wasn't that strike. I don't know if you believe that. It sure seemed that way in watching the doc.
Yeah, that's the way it was positioned. Again, I don't know if I believe that either. I mean, it's hard to say given we don't know how it would have played out, and maybe if he continued on. I mean, they had the baseball people on there talking about if he continued playing or putting in the effort that he was and continued, you know, gaining that experience that he could have made the major leagues or something of that nature. Who knows how good he would have been or if he even makes it. But Yeah, it's a fair point. If they don't have that strike, then maybe Jordan doesn't entertain coming back. But it is a big what if. But those sorts of scenarios littered most careers. You can play the what if game with literally everything. But yeah, it was fun to think about all that stuff. It was fun to think about all the small slights that Jordan had to sort of get through, or not get through, but even manufactured himself, and the way he used that as fuel to just push through that second three-peat, because he had done it all. He needed something to fuel him beyond, obviously, just the cause for winning. And I've really appreciated BJ Armstrong in the last couple of episodes. I thought he's been damn good.
Yeah, I do feel too, like the one thing I will say about this doc I've been frustrated with is Tony Kukoc was a key member of that team. He's been relegated to just two small sections, a discussion of how he was embarrassed on the U.S. Olympic team, and then obviously in the 1994, you know, what happened with the 1.8. I was happy they showed Phil's reasoning for putting him in that position, that he did hit a bunch of game-winning shots that season. But outside of that, he's been almost non-existent, not talked about. I found that disappointing because, to me, he deserves better. But that's probably one of the few things I have an issue with in this whole doc. I think outside of that, it's been absolutely fantastic.
Yeah, we've been having this discussion on the Bulls HQ Discord forum. If you want to be part of that, send us an email at bullshq@gmail.com. But we've been talking about our feelings about the documentary more from a holistic standpoint, and what, you know, if it meets our expectations. And to some degree, it always will, because we are obviously Bulls fanatics. If you are listening to this podcast, I'm sure you're listening to The Last Dance. You're a hardcore Bulls fan. So no matter what they produce, given that it's Michael Jordan, we're all going to be, you know, just enthralled with what's going on. We're just going to be completely entertained by it no matter what. But, you know, maybe stepping back slightly and maybe being a little bit objective about it, it's probably been more of a Jordan puff piece than a Chicago Bulls recount of sorts, which is why certain things have been missing in the episodes that I would have liked to have seen. Like, they didn't even talk about Hugh Hollins in 1994. You just alluded to the Kukoc stuff there. Maybe we get more Tony, that we're in episodes 9 and 10, where they're probably going to go into that Pacers series, and he was really good in that Pacers series and saved the Bulls to a degree. So maybe we'll get more Tony there. But it is interesting how there's been certain elements of it that I would have liked to have seen that we probably didn't necessarily get. They didn't mention really Sean Kemp at all in the 96 finals. He was pretty damn amazing in those finals. So there's elements of that that have been missing, which I'm not surprised, given that, again, Jordan has been the driving force behind this documentary, was always going to be, given that he was involved in the production of it, I suppose. But at the same time, I would have liked to have seen certain other elements covered off, like Kukoc, like Pippen, like other little storylines throughout the years.
I did think, too, you know, this was the episode where people were saying it was a little controversial that he'd be portrayed negatively, and there absolutely was that. I mean, it's not great, some of the stuff he was saying to Scott Burrell, right? But then you also saw the counter, where Scott Burrell brings in two guys from his Connecticut team, where Michael takes his time, he's laughing with them, joking around with them. I mean, it was just so cool to see Michael, you know, for a teammate to step in and be just like such a class act for two other guys from the UConn, and see him joking around about how they have a great women's team. And it was just, I love that scene. Like, that to me also shows the great side of the man. And I think he is absolutely a great man. I know he has his faults, as all people do. I mean, you know, some of the heroes in my life, you know, you heard about John Kennedy, for example, you know, though he had a lot of faults that people didn't talk about at that time and didn't realize until many years later. But overall, in the grand summary of the man, I don't see how you could watch this and not feel like this guy was really something, you know, like, and not admire him, which leads to my question to you. I'd like to bring this up, which I kind of touched on in our Twitter back and forth. I like to throw out a couple names, and I like you to tell me, do you feel better or worse than you did before this documentary about this player? Mm-hmm. So you want to do this?
Yeah, let's do it.
Michael Jordan.
Feel better. I was always going to feel better. I alluded to it last week, but there was no way I was going to feel worse unless something horrific came out that we didn't know about. But of course, this, you know, watching this has just reinforced his greatness, the fact that he is the GOAT. And I think that in part is the reason why this whole thing went as sort of being produced, the fact that maybe Jordan just wanted to reclaim, not necessarily reclaim, but just let the youngins out there know, who maybe have never seen Jordan, who he is or how he played, all that sort of stuff. Just let him know, let them know who exactly he was. So Jordan, comes away looking even better than what he did before.
Yeah, before this, Doc, if you ask me, if there's one person in the world that you'd like to spend 10 minutes with to talk to, I would have said Michael Jordan. The only difference now is I would want 20 minutes. So that's how much better I feel about him. He's, to me, the greatest human being in the history of the world, outside a few other people.
Me.
Let's go. Maybe we can go back. There's been a couple of good people throughout the centuries, but he's definitely up there in the top 10. Scottie Pippen.
We'll see. The way he's been perceived on the documentary, to me, I think has been at a detriment to him, I believe. Now, it hasn't changed my views of him. I still love Scottie. Scottie, it's funny. I prefer, like, whenever we have a star player on the Bulls, which is rare these days, but whenever there is that top-line talent, they're not the ones that I typically gravitate toward. And not that I don't recognize their talent, not that I don't love those players or appreciate them, but it was the same thing with Jordan, same thing with Derrick Rose. But to me, it's just like common sense, or just it's written in stone that you love and appreciate those players, where it's guys like Noah, guys like Taj, guys like Kirk, guys like Pippen, who I tend to love more for whatever reason. I don't know exactly why that is, but to me, I don't know. The way that Scottie has been perceived in this doc, again, it's more of a Jordan production than it is a Bulls production. I would have liked it to have been a little bit different. So I think generally there might be a chance that other people view Scottie a little bit differently. But to me, I haven't changed my opinion of him.
Yeah, I actually, believe it or not, say my opinion of Pippen is better. And that's almost strictly with the universal comments from teammates, how much they loved him. So I wouldn't say mine was low before, but I definitely felt he wasn't, one of the top five players from that era. I think he's absolutely top 50 all time. I think he's probably the best defensive player, but I just didn't have as high of a view of him as everyone else did, but I definitely feel better about him now. Let's go to Phil Jackson.
Well, see, I would have liked to have seen more Phil, to be honest with you. We've seen snippets of Phil and his wizardry, if we want to say that. But I would have liked to see more Phil as well, because he's an intriguing character. So my opinion probably hasn't changed too much. If anything, it's grown slightly, but I would have liked to have seen more what Phil did. We talk about coaches managing egos in today's game, but imagine just being in that situation where you're not only trying to manage Jordan, the biggest player that's ever seen in this game, but you've got the whole dynamics happening with Kraus. You've got Jerry Reinsdorf just sitting on his ass doing absolutely nothing. So the way he managed his men, that to me is very interesting. And I would have liked to have meant that to be explored a little bit more than what it has.
How about Jerry Reinsdorf?
My negative opinion of Jerry Reinsdorf grows by the hour I watch these documentaries. And I have an overwhelming feeling that after episode 10 concludes that I'll be very, very pissed off at Jerry Reinsdorf, even more so than I have been in the past.
Okay. How about, that's interesting, Steve Kerr?
I love Steve Kerr. Every time he talks, I'm hooked. I'm enthralled by Steve Kerr. I wish he was part of the Bulls organization. That's the one thing that annoys me about the Bulls, is that most people who have been connected to this franchise have left the franchise and never haven't necessarily ever come back. And Steve Kerr is one of those guys who I would have loved to remain with the Bulls in some capacity, whether that was years ago as a general manager, whether that's more recently as a coach. The fact that he's coaching elsewhere, or he's not part of the Bulls in some shape or form, like, that bothers me. So I wish Bulls players, including Steve Kerr, were more connected to the franchise, and it's sad that that isn't the case.
Dennis Rodman.
Probably the same. Probably just, my admiration hasn't necessarily changed.
Okay. Anybody else you wanted to add? Those were the main ones I wanted to get your opinion on. There's not really any major figures that we haven't really
touched on. My feelings on Kraus are the same. I think mostly they're all the same, either because they haven't shown enough of those guys within the documentary. It's been mostly about Jordan, or things have gotten worse for certain people like Reinsdorf. But for Jordan, obviously, the love has grown a lot more, and that would be the case given the most of the documentary has been about him.
Agreed. And it's been great. I cannot wait for the final two. I got to admit, a little bit of sorrow that these will be the final two, but I got great news for you, Mark. I'm working on a documentary of the three alphas. So the three alpha season, I might actually enlist your support, with some comments. I do need some opposing views, and I'm sure yours are going to be exactly opposed to mine, but,
most likely.
It's going to be a mini documentary, so it won't be too long, probably about 10 minutes long, maybe 15,
yeah.
But I think you're going to enjoy it. It's a justification for the three alphas. It's a review of the season and of the, and we all know the story, right? The, unfortunate, break of, Rondo's thumb, but I'm trying to get interviews with Jimmy Butler, Dwayne Wade, and Rondo. So far, I've been unsuccessful in those attempts.
Surprisingly.
I'm hoping to get them on board, and it would be an entertaining doc, I think. So I hope to get your support.
Well, 100%. I'll happily be part of it. Now, in saying that, I do know your lead times in terms of production is quite long. If based on your previous efforts, so I'm not expecting it to see the light of day before the world blows up and it sort of inhales itself. So, my expectations,
maybe the 10-year anniversary.
In terms of my expectations of delivery of the product to the masses, I'm not expecting anything within the next 20, 30 years, something of that vicinity. But when it does finally get out and surfaces and you do finally get to talk to Jimmy Butler, Rondo, Wade, all the other parties that were involved, then I most certainly will be looking forward to seeing it and plugging it on Twitter, if Twitter is still a thing at that point.
Well, I'm open for an idea about the title of the doc. So if you have any, please send them over to me. Fans, listeners of Bulls HQ, please send me those at CBEFred on Twitter or ChicagoBullseye@gmail.com. And if you give me a good idea for the title of the doc, I will give you congratulations in the credits.
Well, there you go. And alluding to my point about your slow production time, you did say on record on this podcast last week that we would have a sneak peek, or not even a sneak peek, we would have the full version of the Heinrich song to share with the listeners. But
did I really say that?
You did say that, and to no surprise,
I had the basement with the basement.
to no surprise, you've failed to meet the deadline. So, yeah, that just backs up my point about not necessarily seeing your three alphas doc anytime soon.
I should have not concentrated on that doc so heavily. I should have finished the Heinrich song first. I promise I'll give a better focus and deliver what I was promised to you. Wow. I can't believe I didn't come through with that. Are you sure?
Yeah, I got to go back and listen to the last episode. I can believe that you didn't come through with it. So right. Maybe one day, soon. That just about does it for this episode of Bulls HQ. As Fred sort of suggested there, episodes 9 and 10 of The Last Dance air next Sunday. We will be back then to discuss the final wrap-up of The Last Dance. That has been fun. It's given us something to talk about during this pandemic where no basketball has been played. So we'll see what we'll be talking about after then. But I am thoroughly looking forward to watching the last couple episodes of The Last Dance and wrapping that up with you, Fred. Thank you for joining me today, my friend. Thank you to listeners for listening into the podcast. Follow us on Twitter @CBEFred. You can follow me @MKHoops. Follow the show too. @BullsHQPod, send us an email, bullshqpod@gmail.com. But that just about does it for this episode of Bulls HQ. Thank you for listening in. We'll be back next week to talk all things Last Dance episodes 9 and 10. But until then, speak soon, Bulls fans.